Hi, thank you so much for joining me, Gary Zacharias with the Apologist Bookshelf. We're working our way through a book called Confident Faith. This is a little different than what I've done in many of the past podcasts, where I've gone from one book to the other just to give you a taste and a hint of some of the things they talk about. I'm working my way through this entire book. We've been looking at things like the different worldviews that Middleburg talks about here and how they differ from Christianity and how they have problems with them. And so he's landed on Christianity as the best worldview. And now he's been giving what he calls arrows that point to the truth of Christianity. And we've gone through 12 of those arrows. He's got a total of 20. So I'm going to see if I can finish up the arrows for this podcast, and we'll do another section of the book next time. This is in a new chapter, even though it's a continuation of these arrows. It's called How History and Experience Point Toward Spiritual Truth. So arrow number 13, he says, is Jesus' sinless life that backed up his claim to be the Son of God. And he points out pretty obviously that nobody ever was able to show Jesus had committed any kind of sin or wrongdoing. He kept saying that he was the Son of God. And if he's going to say that, he's got to be without sin. I mean, I always think about the apostles. The disciples of Jesus, there were 12 of them to start with. They were good Jews. They knew their Old Testament. And then here comes a guy who claims to be God. And are they going to fall for that if they don't see the kind of life that would be expected to be from the Son of God? No, I mean, they're going to dump him fast and say, well, how are you different than us? You're messing up as big as we are. So said he claimed repeatedly to be the Son of God, which means he's got to be sinless and without flaw. The only accusation that was brought up against Jesus was blasphemy, because it says he called God his Father, therefore making himself equal with God. And that would be blasphemy, wouldn't it, if it wasn't true? Middleburg says he doesn't know of any other major religious leaders who claim to be sinless. Muhammad was pretty honest. He was open about his need for God's forgiveness. Joseph Smith, well, he died in a gun battle where he was defending himself with a six-shooter. I may have killed people in the fight. So Jesus is the standalone leader that you can respect and you can imitate and you can trust and follow in everything. By the way, I do a talk on Christianity compared to other religions. Do you notice other religions love to put Jesus in there someplace, but it's Christianity that makes him the center of their faith. So everybody likes Jesus. There are things about Jesus that are very admirable. Way above any other religious leader. Okay, how about arrow 14? Jesus' resurrection. Oh man, I just did a talk on this at our church. This is powerful. I mean, this is the heart of Christianity, isn't it? Now, why would we believe that the resurrection really happened? Well, here's what Middleburg points out, and I think you can even make more of a case, but I'm just going through this book. I've got a talk on the resurrection. You can take a look at that on my website, apologeticsforlife.org, and I've got all sorts of videos and podcast information, audio downloads, all sorts of stuff. So anyway, this is what Middleburg covers. The resurrection of Jesus, why do we believe that? Number one, his tomb was empty. I mean, that is so huge, isn't it? They started in Jerusalem proclaiming that he was risen. Now, that's in Jerusalem. That's where the crucifixion took place. That's where the burial took place. All people had to do is say, what? What do you mean Jesus is risen? Let's go. And they'd go to the tomb, open it up, and pull out the body. Nobody was able to find the body, were they? So that's a huge issue right there. There's an empty tomb. There's no good rationale for saying that anybody stole it or moved the body. Really? Why would the disciples move the body? What did they gain out of that? What kind of motivation? So then they're going to make up stories and lie about that the rest of their life? And look what happened to them. They faced persecution. They were martyrs. And why would you die for something you think might be true, but you don't die for a lie. And so there's the first reason we can believe in the resurrection. Number two, the risen Jesus was seen by eyewitnesses. They're the disciples and several hundred, according to Paul. And Gary Habermas says this, who's probably the leading expert on the resurrection. Friends as well as foes saw Jesus not once but many times over a period of 40 days. We're told that these numbers included both men and women, hard-hearted Peter and soft-hearted Mary Magdalene, indoors and outdoors. And by the way, people will say, oh, it was just they wanted to see him so badly they hallucinated. You don't have group hallucinations. Okay, so there goes that idea. So the risen Jesus was seen. Here's a third point to go for the proof of the resurrection. The accounts of the risen Jesus were frequent and early. This is not 70 years later somebody writing it down. Think about this. In 1 Corinthians 15, the verses 3 to 8, Paul has included in there a creed. He's recorded this creed. He did not make it up. That's really important to think about. He wrote the Corinthians in the 50s AD. He mentions this creed, the one about Christ died for our sins, he was buried, he was raised from the dead on the third day, he was seen by Peter and the 12 and then 500. So where is he getting this? Well, most people that have studied this say this is a creed that was given to the early Christians to memorize, to get basic information about Jesus, and it was probably done within a year or two of the resurrection. That's amazing. So close to the events themselves. Okay, arrow 15. Let's go beyond the resurrection, the emergence of the church. So think about how that began. The Roman leaders, the Jewish leaders, they could have squashed that whole movement. When Peter stands up and gives a talk, and when the others start speaking, what could they do? They just go get the body of Jesus, put it in a wheelbarrow, and parade it up and down Main Street. Here's your dead Messiah, they could say. Is this really the guy you want to follow? Well, that'd be the end of that, wouldn't it? But no, the church emerged. It was so tied to the claims of the resurrection, it could not have grown without the resurrection actually happening. That appeal to public knowledge was amazing. Arrow 16, the changed lives of early skeptics affirmed the truth of the resurrection. So who are we talking about as far as skeptics go? Well, the number one skeptic, of course, you'd think would be Saul of Tarsus, later known as Paul. I mean, think about him. He was present, and he was supporting the stoning of Stephen, a Christian disciple. And it says Saul agreed completely, and it says he was uttering threats with every breath and was eager to kill the Lord's followers. And he's on his way to Damascus. Boy, he's going to take care of Christians that he finds there. And then the risen Jesus appeared to him and temporarily blinded him. Amazing. He became a great proponent of the faith, probably the world's leading missionary. What about James, the half-brother of Jesus? He must have been a doubter. I mean, he grew up, he was part of the family, and the family, it says, thought Jesus was nuts. But what does he do? Later on, he becomes the key leader in the early church. So it said Paul and James were living during the earthly ministry, and there's no reason for them to wish Jesus back from the dead, and instead, they turned around completely. And so it says these two skeptics become star witnesses, and they're indicating that the faith is built on some solid foundation of facts. Here's another arrow, number 17, the willingness of the disciples to die. Why is that? Well, they made not only turnarounds in their lives, but the disciples died for the truth of their claims. Almost all other disciples, as far as we know, died willingly as martyrs for the truth of those claims. They didn't back off. And I think about what Chuck Colson said. You know, he was part of the Watergate conspiracy, and he said, conspiracies fall apart pretty fast when you're put under some pressure. But these people didn't knuckle under. They went to their deaths saying, it's real. Yeah, I think that's something. Now, of course, I think this is a good point. Middleburg brings up the Muslim terrorists and says, well, hey, how about them? They were willing to die for what they believed. Okay, yes, but there's a huge difference between those two examples. The disciples of Jesus, they were in the position to know for certain whether or not what they claimed was correct. The Muslims didn't know. They were hoping it was the case that Allah was on their side, but they didn't know for certain. So the old story about nobody dies for what they know to be a lie. And so these disciples went to their deaths. And they were certain of what they had believed in. Arrow 18, the changed minds of some modern skeptics support the truth of Christianity. And these are great stories here, so bear with me because I think it's wonderful to hear these. Simon Greenleaf. Okay, he was a Jewish scholar. He was one of two professors that built the Harvard Law School into a well-known, world-class institution it is today. He wrote the standard textbook on what constitutes good arguments in a court of law. He was brilliant. Well, one day, Some of his students challenged him, said, "Why don't you examine the evidence for the resurrection of Christ?" Well, he was skeptical. And remember, he's a scholar and built the Harvard Law School, so he knows law and he knows evidence and things like that. So he thoroughly investigated the evidence, and what happened to him? He became an ardent follower of Jesus. He wrote a defense of the Christian faith. It was called The Testimony of the Evangelist, The Gospels Examined by the Rules of Evidence. Here's another person, a man named A.H. Ross. I don't remember that name. But he was an English journalist, and he set out to publish a popular book that would expose the resurrection as a myth. And he used the pen name Frank Morrison. And so that's what he was going to do. He was going to set out, you know, the bah humbug approach to the resurrection. And he came up with a title later for his book as a result of his studies called Who Moved the Stone? And his studies convinced him that Jesus really did rise from the dead. And once he was confident of that, he became a Christian. Here's another individual, Sir Lionel Lukhoo, L-U-C-K-H-O-O. He was listed in the 1990 Guinness Book of World Records as the world's most successful lawyer. I'd never heard of him. But his record as a defense attorney, catch this, 245 successive murder acquittals. He was twice knighted by Queen Elizabeth, and he did the same thing. He rigorously analyzed all the evidence he could find for the resurrection of Jesus for several years. Here was his conclusion. "I say unequivocally that the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus Christ is so overwhelming that it compels acceptance by proof which leaves absolutely no room for doubt." He said you could come up with a whole bunch of more stories like Josh McDowell, Viggo Olson. He was going to be a surgeon. And Lee Strobel, of course, he started out as a skeptical legal reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and he investigated Christianity and has put out all these Case for books, you know, The Case for Christ, Case for Faith. So a lot of smart people have carefully investigated the facts and ended up choosing the Christian faith. He said it doesn't make it true. So that's a good point. I'm glad Middleburg said that, but it lends weight to that possibility. He says as a minimum, it ought to motivate any sincere seeker to consider the points of evidence. Yeah, without just shutting the door on it, think about it. Here's Arrow 19, the testimonies of countless believers. So people from all sorts of backgrounds and cultures and walks of life, all for the 2,000 years, have found that faith in Jesus makes a huge difference in their daily lives. He said, yeah, a lot of people have lots of different religious ideas, and that doesn't prove Christianity is true. He said, yeah. But when you've seen life after life dramatically change because people met Christ, when you've seen marriages saved, he says, families mended, you've seen self-centered people become other-centered and willing to sacrificially serve people who are less fortunate, when you've seen stingy people become generous, he said these examples could be multiplied millions of times. He said it begins to come up with a knowledge that God is alive and Jesus really does change lives for the better. I know at our church that they had something called a cardboard testimony. I don't know if you've ever seen something like that. But we had people come to the front of the church and hold up a cardboard sign, one at a time. And the sign might have said something like drug addict, or it may have said adulterer or something like that. And then they flipped the cardboard over and they'd written on the other side, saved by Jesus or free of drugs or something like that. And it was silent. They didn't say anything. I had tears in my eyes because so many people have changed their lives tremendously because of the working of God and Jesus in their lives. All right, here's his last arrow, and then we'll end on this one. This is arrow number 20. Why is Christianity true, Middleburg says? Because Jesus said so, and he's got the credentials to speak with authority. He said, you ever notice almost everyone tries to claim Jesus? Remember what I said a little earlier in this podcast. For the New Ager, he's an enlightened spiritual master. For a Baha'i person or a Muslim, he's a great prophet. He's a liberal, maybe for some. He's a street preacher to others. He's a consummate business leader to some. For a communist, he's the head of a commune, et cetera, et cetera. So he's all these different things. Jesus, everybody's buddy. Well, says, I'd like to make a modest proposal. Why don't we let Jesus speak for himself? He has the credentials and he's got the credibility. And here are some of his challenging words. And I want to end this podcast with some of these words. Hear the words of Jesus. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me. How about this one? You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And then some really encouraging words. Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. At the very end of the chapter, I'd like to quote this. He has a quote from Simon Greenleaf, that Harvard lawyer that he mentioned earlier. In examining the evidences of the Christian religion, it's essential to the discovery of truth that we bring to the investigation a mind freed, as far as possible, from existing prejudice and open to conviction. There should be a readiness on our part to investigate with candor, to follow the truth wherever it may lead us, and to submit without reserve or objection to all the teachings of this religion if it be found to be of divine origin. Now, who can argue with that? I think that's wonderful. He said, let's come, as we begin to examine different religious claims, get rid of our prejudices. Just be open to the information and investigate to follow the truth wherever it may lead us. We don't want to start off by saying, well, this can't happen or that can't happen or I don't believe this. We follow the truth wherever it leads us. And he said, once you follow it and you say, hey, that's real, then he says, we submit to the teachings of this religion if we think it's of divine origin. And of course, that's exactly what Middleburg says. Christianity is the divine origin religion in this world today. All right, so we have maybe, maybe two or three more podcasts that we'll do on this book. Again, the title was Confident Faith. I think you'd really like it. It's got a lot to think about, but it's easy to read, and I know it'd be a benefit to you. All right, thanks. Talk to you later.